We are going to be listening to Lord Alan Zubiri, who is going to talk to us about sustainability and language conservation in the Philippines. So we are really having a great journey across the world this afternoon. Thank you. The floor is yours.
Thank you for the introduction. I would like to thank for the opportunity to present this research here in the island of Hawaii. So it's about sustainability and language conservation. So going through the different case studies of the different languages in the Philippines of largest vitality rating. So some preliminaries, because not everyone is familiar with the Philippines. It is an archipelagic state, so it's an archipelago composed of several islands. It's home to 170 plus languages, predominantly of the Austronesian language family. It is considered as a language hotspot, meaning it has high linguistic diversity, but also a high rate of endangerment. So we have several endangered languages. And the country has been implementing a mother tongue-based multilingual education language policy since 2012. So of the 170 plus languages, 19 of those were chosen to be a medium of instruction and has been implemented in several of the regions of the country. So as a quick overview, this is the vitality profile of the Philippines based on Ethnologue. It shows the number of Philippine languages with their vitality rating. So if we see the illustration in the picture, it looks like a normal bell curve showing a healthy landscape for the Philippine languages. Overview of Igids, I'll skip that. So of the several languages of the Philippines, 182 are living, 4 are extinct. All the extinct languages are considered Negrito languages. They're spoken by the Negrito community. Of the living languages, 41 are institutional, 72 are developing, 46 are vigorous, 13 are in trouble, and 10 are dying. So when compared to other countries in Southeast Asia, it can be said based on the Ethnologue profile that Philippines is on the more healthier side on language endangerment. However, is this the reality in the field? So we see the different vitality rating identified by Ethnologue, but as you go through the different field sites, you'll see that later we'll point out that the picture painted by Ethnologue is more positive looking, but the field is more sad. So of all the field sites that I've been to, I chose a few, so I just chose 5, encompassing 6 languages, to highlight the languages belong to the different vitality rating. So there's Archimedes Norte for Bicol, Nueva Vizcaya for Isinay, South Cotabato for Tivoli and Blaan, Surigao del Norte for Mamanua, and then Quezon for Alamat Agta. Okay. So for Bicol, many of the Austronesians and Filipinos are familiar with this language. It's one of the major languages of the Philippines. So particularly of the geographic range that I look into is Eastern Camarines Norte, because that's the location of the variety called Bicol Daet. It has a vitality rating in Ethnologue of 3, meaning it is a language of wider communication, or it is a regional lingua franca. As I mentioned earlier, mother tongue has been implemented in the Philippines, but in this case, the mother tongue that is being taught in the schools is Tagalog, the biggest language in the Philippines, which is quite funny if you think that Bicol itself is one of the bigger languages, but the language being taught in school is a totally different language. So a brief overview of the situation in the field. Many outsiders, even some linguists, consider Bicol as a single language, so they call it just Bicol. But even speakers of the language knows that there are several mutually unintelligible varieties. So usually we categorize those varieties that are mutually unintelligible as different languages. So in essence, we should consider the different varieties of Bicol separate languages, but the common conception or preconception of Bicol is that we label it as one big group, and that conception of a homogeneous lek has some impact on how we form language policies, how the communication on the languages is happening. So this homogeneous packaging of Bicol is detrimental to the development and the invigoration of the different varieties of Bicol. So for this case, for example, in the case of Bicol Daet, found in Eastern Camarines Norte, it is the only variety of Bicol that is not being used anywhere. It is also the only variety of Bicol that do not have a dictionary or a basic grammatical sketch. So we consider this variety, Bicol Daet, as the most endangered of all the varieties of Bicol. Okay. Despite the fact that it is identified as a Vitality 3 language. Okay. So some pictures of this school. So these are Bicolano children being taught Tagalog. Okay. So next we'll go to the languages found in South Cotabato. So these are the two of the several Bilic languages, Tiboli and Blaan. So Tiboli, I went to Lake Cebu and Tiboli municipality. Tiboli is identified as a level 4 language, educational, meaning it's supposed to be a medium of instruction language. The language, the mother tongue taught in schools is also Tagalog. It is Tiboli in IP schools or indigenous people schools, but most IP schools are either not regular or it will have the same spread or coverage of a regular school. So Tiboli, if you went to Lake Cebu or Tiboli municipality, you can see signages written in the Tiboli language. You can find official documents from the municipal hall and other forms of material written in Tiboli. The use of the language actually is vibrant, and there are also efforts to reinvigorate the language. However, there are still some limitations on the availability of materials for Tiboli. For Blaan, there are several dialects of Blaan. I focus more on the Western Blaan variety, the one found in Coronadal, Tupi, and Polomolok. It is identified as 5, developing language. So supposedly a developing language has a standardized orthography. The mother tongue taught in schools in South Cotabato is also Tagalog, because supposedly by jurisdiction of the lingua franca, it's supposed to be Maguindanaoan or Malanao, but they don't want to use that because they told the officials they're not Moro or they're not a Muslim IP group, so they don't want to use their language. They rather use Tagalog than learning another language. So Blaan is different from Tiboli in a way that the Blaan occupies a very niche position in both the society and language use. So Blaans usually defer to Tiboli in everything. So when you ask them what language they want to use, Tiboli, what practices they want to continue doing, or what kinds of behavior they want to practice, they want to do the Tiboli dances, the Tiboli everything. So Tiboli is like the prestige language for them. And another property of the community is that they are fragmented. So unlike the Tiboli, that you have municipalities that are predominantly Tiboli speakers, Blaan, you have fragments all over the place. So you won't find a municipality with a predominant Blaan population. So it's always a minority in all the areas. And while you have abundant number of speakers, because of their fragmented spread of communities, there's less communal cohesion, like in the Tiboli. You have a firm council of elders, firm continuation of the Tibone heritage, but for Blaan, you can, it's very difficult to ask, for example, any elder to decide for anything that will be implemented for the Blaan community. So here, you see the Tiboli town with the Tiboli word canon. Then here are some of the signs in Tiboli. So you will see actual Tiboli label. So So you'll see this in the Tiboli municipalities, but you'll never see Blaan versions of this. So we see the disparity between the two situations of the Bilik languages. So this is this house is very interesting. When I first came to this place, they told me it is a Blaan house in a Blaan barangay. And then when the elders came, it is actually a Tiboli house. So it is called Sebek. So it's like the traditional house, the ceremonial house where you do the prayer, the rituals and everything. So, and then the Blaan elders told me, oh, everything that's Tiboli, you can also do, consider that Blaan. Oh. This is a mixture of Blaan and Tiboli elders because I picked the barangay between the two main towns. So the barangay is composed of Tiboli and Blaan. Okay. Next is Minamanwa. Look, you can find the Mamanwa language near the Lake Mainit area, or specifically in Claver, Surigao del Norte. It is also identified as a developing language. So again, a language with a standardized orthography. The mother tongue taught in schools is Surigaonon, one of the 19 official languages. When I did my assessment there for both MTP-MLE and vitality rating, I asked the teachers why do they use Surigaonon, because actually they can use Mamanwa. And then the teacher told me, because she's not Mamanwa, she's a Surigaonon, and then she would want to use her own language rather than learn Mamanwa and then teach. So the situation in Minamanwa is that most of the children are already bilingual in Surigaonon, because if they go to the city, Surigao City, they always use Surigaonon as a medium of communication. The community is very proud of their heritage. So because recent genetic work in the Philippines identified us, the Mamanwa, as the first of all the IPs in the Philippines. So genetic wise, they are the Philippines have Negrito population and then also Asunisian population. So obviously the Negrito populations are older. Then of all the Negrito population, Mamanwa is the oldest. So they're very proud. So they call themselves the first people of the Philippines. And they are also very wary of researchers, so they have like somewhat like research fatigue. They always tell people that researchers come to their community, do everything, and then leave, and then the community doesn't get anything in return or doesn't get news on what has happened. And then there are also complex problems in the area, actually in other areas also, but if you work with Negrito communities in the Philippines, there are certain issues that you encounter often. So for example, armed groups. So for example, in this case in Surigao, it is one of the mining regions where you have mines, both legal and illegal. And then they encroach on the ancestral domains, on the lands of the indigenous communities. And then there are conflicts regarding that. So whenever you want to start a documentation project, you would need to address other issues first, because they don't care about language documentation unless you address the more pertinent issues. Okay. So this is up going to the Mamanwa village. I'm with my main participant. And then this is a school. So you see, this is an example of the materials being used to Mamaniwa children. This is in Surigao, no? And then Isinay. So you can find Isinay up north in northern Philippines, the town of Alitao, Bombang, and Dupax. It is a threatened language situation in the field. This is healthier, so you can see that we're going down the beta rating. So one of the dialects is already moribund. It has a very small amount of fluent elder speakers. The community is very passionate in invigorating their language, so we have several projects there. The standardization of orthography has been done by Lordy Lee, also with a dictionary. We also have already trained key persons in the community. They are teachers. So we have trained basic training for both archival, basic linguistics, and basic language documentation. And then we're ongoing, we're going to do more material development to reinforce the invigoration of the language. And then, generally it's positive, the outlook is positive for Sinai, because the community is very passionate to revitalize their language. So we already did this, so we have stories, they create big books, small books, the usual revitalization stuff. Then the last is Alabat Agta, with a vitality rating of 8B, nearly extinct. So the mother tongue taught in school is also Tagalog. The situation in the field, there are very few fluent speakers of Alabat Agta. I can count all of them in one, in two hands. One recently died last year. And then several of the females have breast cancer, and they don't want to go to hospitals because they believe in the traditional medicine, the herbs. And I told them, I haven't heard a cure that's herbal. So you need to ask, for example, the military mission if they can help about that. But they're very afraid to do that. The children are already mostly monolingual in Tagalog because they see Tagalog as a form of socioeconomic mobility. So they prefer their children to be monolingual in Tagalog because they think that they'll have better job opportunities, they'll be able to go to school. And I asked them, especially the fluent elders, if that's okay to lose their language. They said that for them it's fine because they still have their physical attributes. So they are still physically distinct. So they can afford to lose the language part. And then when we started doing revitalization Langdok for Alabat Agta, it's very difficult because when I went there, the community hasn't eaten anything, and that's around 6 a.m. So we need to do a feeding program first, and then there's all the children are somewhat sick, so we need to find medicine, and then someone died, and then so we need to get him from the hospital and then have a funeral service and then everything. So it's very complex. That was before I started telling them the importance of their language. So in this case, the approach should be very holistic. You need to address all their priorities before you can do anything about their language. So this is Alabat. Okay. So that's the traditional house, Bayay. Okay. So looking at the reassessment, we see that personally, I would reassess all the current vitality rating at Ethnolog with a lower vitality rating based on the field research. Besides Alabat Agta, because it's very difficult to go down 8B. So if you go to 9, it's like. So while the vitality profile of the Philippines found in Ethnolog indicates a healthier landscape, the field says otherwise. And there are efforts and attempts, but language documentation in the Philippines remains very niche. It's mostly done by academics or related to research institute. It's reflective of how little importance is given to linguistics, linguists, and languages in general by the country. And it is also propagated by language misconceptions. For example, generally in the Philippines, they call anything that's not Tagalog as dialects to forest and above them. So the Philippines has been petrified in what we call a documentation era. Collect words, collect sentences, translate this, blah, 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 blah. And it's very difficult to do reinvigoration and revitalization because we lack the basic elements to do revitalization. So, and we know that generally, Langdok doesn't directly affect the vitality unless you increase the functional domains of the languages again. So that's why we're targeting children to the primaries, the basic mother tongue, blah, blah. So some of the insights, sensitivity, appropriateness, and urgency, the one-size-fits-all ideology doesn't work in Langdok. So how one do work in Tagalog doesn't mean that it should be the same method for all the other languages. And that's somewhat given. Appropriateness, there's a recent trend in some people doing Langdok in the Philippines. They want to do iOS apps, Android apps for the communities. And I was like, for whom? For what and why? I mean, several of my field sites doesn't have cell phone signal, so, and they don't have phones, and they don't have iPhones. So what's the purpose of creating iOS apps? So it should be appropriate. You should address what the community needs and not what you think they need. And we need to document the languages in the Philippines. We need to document them at a faster rate because they will die out and they won't wait for you. So we need to clarify most of the misconceptions in the Philippines. We need to be active in promoting language and linguistic awareness because, after all, it is only the community that can decide to save its own language. Salamat na. That's thank you in my own mother tongue, Bicol.
Thank you so much. I noticed that in a lot of the pictures that you showed, there were English as well as the indigenous language. And I do work in Indonesia, and I know that English in the globalization context definitely puts pressure on, I'm talking more about Japanese, on a language, but this is seen more in bigger city centers and more with higher class who have more access to education in English. And I wonder from I'm curious to know from your assessments what role English played.
Okay.
Or is it just kind of like the key phrase is welcome, central school?
English is one of the official language of the Philippines, so it's like used everywhere. We learn English at a very young age. And then with regards to the impact of English with other languages, as you have mentioned, most of the middle class people and those who have entered higher education have what we call a Taglish register in our country. They mix English words with the basic Tagalog syntax. So they have that form. But for most of the indigenous communities that I work with, English is not an issue. The more killer language is the Tagalog, which is everywhere in the Philippines. And then recently, the regional lingua franca used in the mother tongue, because the regional lingua franca already have high prestige in the area, because it is the lingua franca, and then it is genetically closer to the language in the area, so it's easier for them to shift, and most likely it's already part of their linguistic repertoire. So because of the recent changes in the policy, they have more reason to choose that language over their own. So generally speaking, in the Philippines, English is dominant, but in terms of endangerment, it's not the one doing the killing.
Well, it's well known that there are lots of really obviously endangered languages in the Philippines, right? But I think it's very good that you point out that a lot of those other languages, you know, have been thought to be more actually, you know, stronger than they actually are. And I'm thinking even some of those major languages that are being used in instruction, you know, in mother-based education, mother tongue-based education. I think some of them, too, it really, linguists, not just politicians, really need to, you know, be part of that discourse of how exactly those languages are maintained. Because, you know, thinking, for example, of Pangasinan and Kapampangan, like those, they lose a lot of ground to Tagalog. And so I think, well, as I said, it's really important to act early and not wait until they reach a level, you know, of endangerment. And so my question to you is, to what degree are linguists involved in that policy making process, and not just on paper, but actually in, you know, making sure that the policies are being implemented?
Yeah, because I know you want to do field work on Kapampangan, and I told you to pick one of the minor languages.
And I did,
yeah,
in addition.
Yeah. Because personally, I think that Langdok is a field where you have a limited number of time, limited resource, and limited number of linguists doing language documentation. So in the big picture, you cannot do all of the endangered languages. So for example, in the context of the Philippines, that's why I push all of my field linguist friends to do one of those languages with lower vitality rating, because no one will do them, even the local linguists, and even those who study languages, because they will go to Tagalog, to Kapampang, the bigger languages. So that's why I always tell my friends, pick one of 7B and below.
But you refer to Grenoble, saying that language documentation doesn't directly lead to language vitality.
Yes, but with your fieldwork experience and funding, you can do many things with the community. I mean, for example, Alex, Yuki, we all did the Negrito communities because they're only. But I need to answer a question. Yes, I believe that linguists should participate more actively, not just in policy making, in the discussion, in the actual creation of all the materials related to languages. But the problem with the Philippine linguistic landscape is that the people in power doing all the policy related to language abhors linguists. So they coined recently a derogative term to call us. They call us linguisticists. So rather than being an actual linguist, they call it linguisticists. And then the current head of the Language Commission is an ultra-nationalist. So he hates other languages besides his own. So with that particular political context, to be honest, it's very hard to practice linguistics in the Philippines. Most of the Filipinos here would agree. But we still do what we can, because if we don't, nothing will change.
Bright lights of the city, better income, and all of the rest of it, you know, and people all around the world tend to be rather materialistic, let's face it. So the big question for any of us who want to see languages survive is how do you motivate the younger people to learn a language when it's just extra work for them?
Whenever I start any of my field project, I always do a community meeting, so you meet the elders, the parents, the children, and then I do a spiel or a speech telling them the pros and cons of language loss and language extinction. So it's like a basic awareness, because for people living in the Philippines, you grow up devaluing your own mother tongue. So people grew up thinking they shouldn't speak their own language. Their language is useless and it's of no value. So you start from there, that what they are speaking are not near dialects of Tagalog, they are legit languages of their own right, with its own vocabulary, grammar, and everything. It's valuable, it's a legit form of communication, and it's part of their heritage. So you start from there. So you start from something basic. You start from highlighting that it's part of who they are, and it's important, and they are important.
It tends to be realized just at the very last moment when a language is dying. That's
yes.
When people know that was their heritage, that was their identity, and it's
yeah.
usually at that point.
Yeah, I always tell them some stories where I've been to communities where the fluent speakers are already like bedridden, and I ask them, they want to wait for the moment where we cannot do anything for their own language. You wake up one day when all your children are speaking what Tagalog, and then that's where they get the passion to pass on their heritage.
Doesn't give anything back. Well, it creates the documentation, which is important, but it certainly doesn't add to confidence or anything to the community. But then if you relinquish the power of the linguist and really bring in the people to do the analysis part, the transcription and translation, which you really don't need to be a linguist to do, and I think in the Philippines it's uniquely a good situation for that because the phonology is relatively simple compared to other parts of the world. It's very simple, right? So you don't need to be highly trained to transcribe these languages. So that the act of transcribing and translating can, especially if there's funding, can, you know, you're doing the documentation on one hand, at the same time, people are really immersing themselves in the language, maybe gaining a better appreciation for it. And whenever I've tried that, I found that the speakers actually, their language improves and they gain an appreciation. I don't know to what extent you are able to do that.
Yeah. Almost all of the projects that I'm familiar with and I do, you always tap locals to help because that's in a Yangdok project. It's always helpful that, and it's better in the good in the long run, that the locals feel engaged and active in doing anything in regards to their language, rather than having a more distant approach that you do this, I do this. It's always better to be more engaged.
Maybe one short question. No? So thank you very
thank
much.
You.